Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everyone, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today, the interview is with Ms. Deborah Greenwood. Ms. Greenwood has traced her roots back to Africa, where she's found her family. One of her relatives was kidnapped by slave catchers, and that's how she ended up being born in America. The name of the tribe, I believe, is the Monkey.
Chimney.
The Chimney tribe, yes. Mm-hmm. And she started an organization to help her family and other people. I believe it's a community of 10,000 people. How are you doing this morning, Ms. Deborah Greenwood?
I'm doing well, Angela. Thank you so much for inviting me to share my story with you.
You're more than welcome. So how did this all come about that you decided to trace your lineage?
Well, it actually started in my family of origin because I came from an activist family. I grew up during the 60s. I was a 60s activist. I started being an activist at the age of 15. I'm now 68, and I'm still an activist. So, it's just, you know, so that's just part of my DNA, who I am. And as an activist, as someone growing up in the 60s, one of the things that we talked about and learned about was about how we were stolen, how our ancestors were stolen from the shores, usually of West Africa, kidnapped, and then taken over during that brutal Middle Passage. Then taken to South America, places like Brazil, the Caribbean, and the United States. Brutalities about slavery is that people from the same tribe or communities were often separated. And that was so they could not talk among each other and plan on how to get their freedom. And so this was a deliberate tactic by the slave owners, by the slave traders, to keep us under submission. As a result of that, our ancestors came and were sold off, mother from child, husband from wife, you know, all that. And we did not know. We weren't able to trace who our people were. So enter Dr. Rick Kittles of AfricanAncestry.com, and he has a database of DNA from, I think it's like 30,000 ethnic groups in Africa, or it might be 3,000, I'm not sure. But as a result of his work, those of us who find ourselves in the diaspora can give a DNA sample, and he will match it with who your people are. And that's how I found out that on my mother's side, I am a Chimney from Sierra Leone. So that's the long way of telling you how that came to be.
Okay. So what was it like finding your family? And how long did it take you to prepare to go there?
Good questions. Well, I tell you, when I found out, you know, I almost wanted to just fall to my knees in gratitude. I'm just talking about it, I'm getting a little emotional because it's like closing an historical loop that was missing. So I knew, you know, we all know, those of us who were born in other places other than the continent of Africa, we all know that that's where our roots are. But it's a vast continent, and we didn't know who our people were. And knowing now that I belonged somewhere, that I belonged with the Chimney people, that I belonged in Sierra Leone, it was just a gift that it's really hard to to quantify
you sound emotional.
Yeah, it was just very emotional. It was, and you know what? It's like, it's also like, you know, I am a fighter, but it's also like fighting against that historical injustice, depriving us of the right to know. So in a sense, it was emotional to find out, but also an act of defiance to say, no matter what you have done to us, we're going to prevail. We're going to get the answers that we seek. And that, you know, that was a part of it too.
Okay. All right. So some of your relatives, or one of your relatives, was kidnapped and brought over here on the brutal slave ship to the America. What did you learn about the relatives or the relatives?
What I learned, and part of this I learned through going to the African American, you know, the new African American Museum in Washington, D.C.
Yes, ma'am, I've heard about it.
Yeah, they haven't. You know, I encourage everybody to go. And here's the thing: you just can't go once. You got to, because it is so vast and there's so much information. You're gonna have to go probably two or three times. So plan to go to D.C. Stay a week, go to that museum, because you will learn so much, again, about how we have persevered. You will learn so much about how the slave trade even began. But going back to your question, what I learned through my research on understanding slavery more was that the slavers preferred young girls who were between the ages of 15 and 30. So more than likely, that was the age of my ancestor who was captured, the shores of Sierra Leone. At the African American History Museum, I learned that there was actually a ship called the Sierra Leone. So I'm going to assume it came from my home country, and that sailed, I think, in the 1600s. While I was in Sierra Leone, because after I learned about this, I had to go and meet my people. In 2018, I took a trip to Sierra Leone.
How was that? How did they greet you?
Oh, my God. the trip itself, I decided to sail over because the idea of being on an airplane for 17 to 24 hours, you know, and all those stops just didn't appeal to me. Well, I sailed over, and by the time I got to Sierra Leone, it was like in the middle of the night, like around 3 o'clock in the morning. And as I was deplaning the plane, I just wanted to kiss everybody I saw. I just wanted to kiss all of them.
Oh,
I just wanted to kiss everybody I saw who was working there. I mean, that's how excited I was. So later in the week, I spent a week there. Later in the week, I went to a Temne community, and the welcome that I received was, I had never felt so warmly welcomed, respected, and loved in my whole life. So it was really, it really touched me. There's a video of that, and it's on our website, which is TimneyClinic.org, and on that you will see my visit, you'll see my welcome, you'll see a little bit of the celebration that we had, and you'll hear me.
Yes, I've seen those videos 3 or 4 times. They were beating drums for you and dancing for you.
And then I got out of the truck and I danced too.
All right.
Oh yeah. I couldn't just sit there and watch. I had to go and participate because I felt like, you know, these are my cousins. This is my family, okay? And so we made our way, and the chief was extremely just very gracious. We're sitting on the porch watching the people gather. People are dancing. And he's fanning me, which was a little embarrassing, okay, because I'm like, he's the chief, okay? I should be fanning him. But he's fanning me. And while I was there, the chief showed us the clinic that they had begun to build. And he asked if I would help complete the clinic. And I couldn't say no. I'm like, yeah. And so that's what I've been doing now for the last 2 years is working with the people in the community to make sure they have a first-class clinic that's going to help women safely deliver their babies, that's going to make sure the kids get the immunizations that they need to ward off infectious diseases, that's going to provide pediatric care because the mortality rates for both women and children before the age of 5 are just unacceptable. The Sierra Leone has the highest maternal mortality rate in the world.
My goodness.
So we've got to do something about that. And again, the kids before the age of 5 who die is quite high. So we got to do something about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're on this quest. The chief has asked you to help with the clinic. So
yes.
I'm looking at the photos and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I see that they've already got the financial aid and the walls up.
Yes. They already had a building up, and that was one of the things that impressed me, that, you know, they were already taking it, they had already taken it upon themselves to do this. And my arrival as an American, I think, led the chief to think, well, gee, maybe this rich American lady, which I'm not, but, you know, maybe this, you know, she's got enough money to travel to Africa, so clearly she's got more money than we have. And, you know, that's true, but we're not rich like, unfortunately, a lot of people in Africa think we are. But, you know, that impressed me, the fact that they had already started and they were just asking for some help.
So how far has the clinic gone now?
So what has happened so far is that I identified a contractor who went out there to take a look at the clinic. And unfortunately, he said the foundation is not good. So we're going to have to build a new one. So we have developed our floor plan, and that was through the advice of members of our advisory group. One of the members of our advisory group, Jacqueline Rice, is a nurse practitioner, certified midwife, and women's health has been her life. And she's been instrumental in helping us design a clinic that will function well to provide the highest level of patient care. So her input has been invaluable in this. So we have agreed upon the floor plan, and the next thing we had to do was make sure that we had a really good website. And I hate to say it, but that took months because I was trying to do it myself, and I really didn't know what I was doing. So after trying to do it myself, I finally said, okay, I got to hire somebody. And after one false start, I worked with a company that did not deliver, but I did find someone else, a gentleman who's from Incredible Design Solutions. And he's from Mauritius. And that helps.
Yes, ma'am.
He's also from the continent.
Okay.
And he just did an incredible job of taking what I had done and creating a website that tells the story, gives a lot of information, and hopefully encourages people to donate to our project. And it's called the Timney Clinic Project. However, this is going to be located in the Monkey Bush community. So when the clinic gets established, it will be called the Monkey Bush Community Health Center.
Okay, so how far are they from a hospital or a clinic? How far away are they from that? Because I know I was reading that they have a high malaria rate and high mortality rate for women and children.
In that particular community, they struggle with malaria and cholera, these infectious diseases. And, you know, cholera is usually the result of inadequate access to clean water and sanitation. So they are about 27 miles from Freetown, which is the capital of Sierra Leone, where the best health facilities are. They're another couple miles from other clinics, but 2 miles can be 20 miles if you don't have transportation.
Yes.
2 miles is not possible if you're in labor, and the only way you have to get there is on a motorbike. So, you know, I'm struggling with issues that we can't even imagine. And their resilience is quite admirable, that despite all this, people are going to survive. And they're going to
people are going to survive.
They're going to survive.
Do they have schools? Because that's the majority of your family, am I right, the 10,000 people?
Well, that's a Timney community. Timney's actually comprised about 35% of the population of Sierra Leone. So we're the largest group, ethnic group there. Excuse me. And so this is one community. But again, like I say, they are my people. You know, they're part of my folks. Now, one of the issues regarding, just trying to get some air here. One of the issues regarding tribes is the unfortunate fact of tribalism. So while I was excited as heck to find out I was a Timney, I did not understand.
You've been walking the same old road for miles and miles. You've been hearing the same old voice tell the same old lies. You've been trying to fill the same old holes inside. When there's a better life, there's a better life.
If you got
All right, everyone, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I'm sorry about the interruption. We had technical difficulties, but we're back on now with Ms. Deborah Greenwood.
Thank you so much. I was talking about tribalism and how when I found out that I was Timney, there's a great deal of pride and feeling of closure about learning my maternal ancestry. But tribalism can be a problem, as we know, in terms of some of the conflicts that have gone on all over the continent. So even though I was excited and I wanted to name this the Timney Clinic, a Timney friend of mine who's lived in the United States a number of years said, you know, might not be a good idea to name it that because we don't want other people to feel excluded. And I thought, you know, he's right. So I consulted with the group, and, you know, four members of our advisory group are from Sierra Leone, 4 are from the United States, and 1 is a Bahamian British citizen. So we have an international group, and we all agreed that we would change the name to Monkey Bush Community Health Clinic.
But we started as a Timney project. So that's why we still call it the Timney Clinic Project, although that will not be the final name.
Okay. So basically, you found your family and you're trying to build a clinic, and you need funding for that clinic, and you need donations. So it's I'm going to spell out the URL for everyone so you can donate. It's T as in Tom, E as in Edward, M as in man, N as in Nancy, E as in Edward, TimneyClinic.org.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. So,
can I tell you a little bit about our current fundraising efforts?
Yes,
maybe
ma'am.
Somebody in your audience can help us. We are working to partner with an internet platform called Omaze. Like, it's like a maze, except it starts with an O, Omaze. And Omaze is a fundraising platform that partners with nonprofits. And what the nonprofits is that they identify a celebrity who's willing to help them out. And then that celebrity will offer like a once-in-a-lifetime experience. For example, Idris Elba has helped a girls' school in Sierra Leone on several occasions.
Keep talking.
Okay. And he's had dinner with people. You know, he's done great, great work. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are also part of this. John Legend, Lady Gaga, Charlize Theron. You know, the celebrities have their areas of interest, and they will partner with nonprofits to offer a once in a lifetime experience, like lunch with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. So we are looking to identify a celebrity who would be interesting in partnering with us so that we can raise the funds that we need. And the way that it works is, let's say that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are offering, having lunch with them. People will like bid, not really bid, but they'll buy like sweeps. It's like a sweepstake. So you'll buy so many tickets, you know, or a lottery. You'll buy so many tickets for X amount of money to be part of the draw, to see who's going to win, that chance. And so we can raise a ton of money that way, and the winner will have a terrific once-in-a-lifetime experience with a celebrity that they love.
Okay, that's wonderful, and I hope that works out. But I have to ask you something. When I think of Africa, I think of black people, the continent Africa, not just West Africa. I think of an entire continent of a billion people, a billion or more people.
Yes.
So my question is this. You said something to me, and it got me to thinking. You brought in my mind some. Because you said there was colonialism there, and I didn't understand that, because Africa to me is all black continent with countries in it. So I didn't grasp that, because my mind just thinks of Africa as black people, but there's colonialism there. I'm thinking to myself, well, she must be talking about white people, Chinese people. And why are they there? I mean, that's all black continent. Why would they even want to be there? After people were enslaved and that horrible transatlantic slave trade, the ships and things, it was horrible going across in those ships. It was hard. People were peeing on each other, doing on each other, menstruating on each other, having babies, catching diseases. I mean, they were beaten. It was horrible. Raped. So why would just talk to me, Ms. Greenwood, talk to me about colonialism.
So So initially, before the slave trade, there was contact between countries in Europe and people in Africa, but they were trading goods. And somehow that evolved to the point of wanting to also trade in humans. And it had, you know, I'm not an expert on this, so I can only give you like a kind of a brief outline. So as feudalism was ending in Europe, there needed to be a way to help uplift the people of Europe through switching from like an agricultural economy to a more industrialized economy. If you're going to have industry, what do you need? You need raw materials in order to run those industries. Which continent has probably more raw materials than any other in the world? Africa. Africa is rich in gold, bauxite, diamonds, oil, you name it, okay? Cocoa, you know, for coffee, you name it, Africa has it. And so what happened is these European countries colonized Africa from the late 19th century until like the 1960s is when many of the countries obtained their, quote, freedom.
But you know, I've never understood that with Mr. Mm-hmm. Mandela, because it takes a lot of nerve to go into a country that you have stolen their relatives from them, enslaved them. Some of them died on the transatlantic ship boat ride, died horrific deaths. Some of them jumped overboard. It takes a lot of nerve to do that.
Well, remember, this was before the internet or even probably telephone. So a lot of things that were going on, the people in Africa would not know. So like the slavery that existed in Africa was much different in European slavery. Because in Africa, if you were a slave, you always had the option of elevating yourself out of slavery. But, of course, not with European slavery. You're a slave. You're supposed to remain a slave for all your life. And I believe that thinking still exists today.
I know it does.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the reaction and the comments that are made about black people with money.
Mm-hmm.
Where I live at, I've had things said to me by the customers while I was in line at a store, said things like, you know, telling a white cashier that you know you have to work. You know you're working. Because she was bagging my girl, you know, stuff like that. So I'm used to the racism. I'm used to the mm-hmm. smart comments and things trying to provoke me, get me upset. But I still thought of Africa as a black country.
Well,
continent.
It's a very, very diverse continent. You know, the Arabs came down and settled in the northern region. And actually, it is believed that in ancient Africa, the northern Africans actually migrated south as well. And I know that was always one of my misconceptions, that there's a big difference between countries like Egypt and then in Libya and Algeria and countries like Ghana. Well, in a lot of instances, I believe they're the same people. And one of the things that was a big controversy when I was growing up is how the Europeans would take Egypt out of Africa and say it was the Middle East, because they couldn't stand the fact that black people had created such an advanced civilization. They still can't figure out how the pyramids were built with no computers, okay? I mean, with very rudimentary tools, and yet people were able to do that. They still can't figure that out.
Okay.
So there's a lot of it, you know, there's a lot about Africa that has is unknown and has been deliberately misportrayed. There's a young man on YouTube. His name is Wode Maya. He's a young man out of Ghana. His mission is to show the real Africa in its full glory. And so he goes from country to country to country to show you the modern advancements, to meet the people, to share some of the customs. And it's a great way for people to learn more about what's going on in contemporary Africa.
Yes, did you get to see any city parts of Africa?
I actually went to five countries. So I started in Sierra Leone. I was there for a week. And Freetown is the capital. And what's happening is that a lot of people from the countryside are migrating, not just in Sierra Leone, but all over Africa. They migrate to the cities in search of jobs. So right now, the density, let me just say this. There are 7 million people in Sierra Leone. 1 million of them live in the Freetown area. The density, the population density of Freetown is twice that of New York. Now, I'm an older person, so as we're driving around, and there are only like 3 streetlights in Freetown. Okay, and I'm like, what? My guide told me that. I'm like, what? And it's just amazing how they navigate. It works, how they navigate these traffic circles and the traffic, but, you know, it works.
Wow.
But for me, it was too much, okay? As I get older, I need less stimulation, okay? There's a lot of stimulation in Freetown. So I also traveled after I left Freetown, after I left Sierra Leone, I next went to Liberia. And in Liberia, there were similarities. But the population wasn't, the density, population density wasn't as acute as it was in Sierra Leone. And I mean, everywhere I went, I really enjoyed a beautiful coastline in Liberia. I didn't get a chance to really to see the coastline in Sierra Leone because I was on a mission. After Liberia, I next went to Cote d'Ivoire. Because I said, let's just go to the contiguous countries, okay? So I went to Cote d'Ivoire. And while there, one of the things that I noticed is that the people were bigger. And when I say bigger, taller, weighed more, okay? And I landed at night. And as I was being driven to my hotel, I commented, I said, God, this is like being in Las Vegas because there are so many lights, okay? I next went to Ghana. And, of course, Ghana is wonderful. While there, I went to a place in Elmina called One Africa Resort.
So how long were you in Africa? I hate to interrupt you like this, but how long were you in the continent Africa?
See, I think like three and a half weeks.
Okay. All right. So one of the places, I think you said it was Ghana, it was like Las Vegas.
I went to Ghana, and I was fortunate to actually drive from Cote d'Ivoire into Ghana. And on the drive, I just saw such lush landscape, banana plants, I mean, just all kind of stuff. And it occurred to me, this feels like the Garden of Eden. You know, because where I looked, lots of agriculture, lots of methods that I had never seen, like netting over some of the plants. But it just felt like there was such an abundance, you know, of resources. It really felt like the Garden of Eden. That's the best way I can talk about it.
Okay.
Because I was mentioning I went to Elmina, Ghana. I went to the slave dungeon there. That's the same place that Barack Obama and Michelle Obama went to. And to hear the story about how our people were kept in there is very disturbing. If I could backtrack a minute to back to Sierra Leone,
yes.
I went to an island called Bunce Island, and that is where many of the captured Africans were kept before they were shipped out. And we had our own door of no return, as they do in Ghana. And I looked at that door, and that may have been the door that my ancestor walked out of in order to get on that horrible ship. So fast forward to Ghana. One of the highlights of the trip is going to a place called One Africa Resort, and this was run by an African-American woman, Imacus. She's like known throughout the continent as like Mother Africa. And her her motto is One Africa. And I think that's a very important concept, that we've got to be united if we're to make sure that we look out for ourselves and defend off foreign intrusion.
Yes, I understand.
The last place I went was South Africa. I had to go to South Africa. And that was where my fun vacation began, because I had tour guides for the first four countries. But a friend of mine who had been to South Africa said, you know, it's just like the U.S. So I said, you know what? It's just like the U.S. I'm going to make my own arrangements. So I did. And I had a ball. I had a lot of fun. I stayed in Johannesburg, and I also stayed in Cape Town. And I say I had a ball because it did feel very much like the U.S.
Okay.
Of course, I went to Robben Island, where they held Nelson Mandela. I went to Nelson Mandela and Winnie Mandela's home in Johannesburg. I went to the site. Many people will remember the young man who was carried by his classmate in Johannesburg to the doctor. I went to their site, the site, his memorial, commemorative site. I went to the Apartheid Museum.
It sounds wonderful. It sounds beautiful, too, and exciting.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the parallels between the movement against apartheid and the movement for Black liberation, very similar. Very similar. And in fact, you know, in terms of what's going on now in Africa, in Nigeria, in the SARS, it's known as a terroristic police movement or unit or units. Again, okay. I know that people are being inspired by what we're doing in terms of Black Lives Matter here in the United States.
Yes.
So we're together, whether we want to realize it or not. We are together as one people.
Okay. All right. That's wonderful, Ms. Greenwood. Again, the Chimney donation site to help these women and men and children to get the medical care they need. They're building their own facility. There's no government helping them. Miss Deborah Greenwood and five or six other people, as you'll see on the website. It's called the Chimney Clinic. And once again, it is spelled T-E-M-N-E. That's T for Tom, E for Edward, M for medical, N for Nancy, E for Edward, Clinic, CLINIC.org. So everyone, visit this site. Visit this site and donate. It's for a worthy cause.
I really appreciate that. And one of the things that Sierra Leone is doing, which is going to help the clinic, is that they have provided not only for free education, free primary education, which is a wonderful step forward, but they're also providing free medical care for pregnant and lactating women. So that's huge in terms of putting a dent into the maternal mortality rate. They're also providing free care for children up to age 5. So once this clinic gets built, we will be hooked into the government to support us, to staff us, and to make sure that we have the funding and the supplies to carry out our mission. So we're really excited about that.
All right. So thank you, Ms. Deborah Greenwood. Thank you for discussing your trip to Africa and the 3.5 weeks that you were there. I envy you because I would love to do that. God bless you and everything you and your team are doing. I hope you get to see your family again, or at least speak to them regularly or communicate with them regularly. And I hope the bond continues to grow. The bond continues to grow between you and your family.
Thank you. And I recommend that everybody who can get your DNA tested at AfricanAncestry.com, because then you'll find out who you are. And and if you're like me, it'll kick off a real curiosity about who am I, what people do I come from, and then for me, I got to meet them.
All right.
So AfricanAncestry.com is a very good place to start.
Don't forget the TimneyClinic.org, people who will listen to this show later on. God bless you, Ms. Greenwood. You have a good day. And
all
I'll
right,
be in touch.
Thank you so much for allowing me to share my story.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll
Bye-bye.
Be sending you a copy.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.
Thank
now.
You, ma'am.